there's been a lot of feedback, let's just say, from the both the agencies and the vendor community around, you know, what's needed to be submitted for these Exhibit 300s.
Changes in terms of?
Fewer data elements that are required. Essentially, there's been a lot of feedback that, you know, what you're asking for is already exists in other places, and so there's no reason to ask for it here. And you basically are creating an environment where you then have to reconcile two sources of the same data. So they're looking to sort of not collect some things that they may have collected in the past. They're also looking at potentially separating. Part of what was in the 300 before was both information that you're requesting around your budget request for the upcoming budget year, as well as cost and performance milestones that you're going to essentially what's your plan for what you're going to do. And so they're sort of looking at potentially separating that a little bit and saying the 300 as it exists in the future might be simply what your budget request is. So it'd be less information is collected, and it'd be a little bit more focused only on what's needed for that budget year. And then the IT dashboard would take care of sort of ongoing management of performance metrics, you know, earned value, cost and schedule, as well as your performance metrics. So they'd use the dashboard to handle that ongoing management of investments, what in the capital planning nomenclature used to be called control or control reviews.
Right.
And they'd use the 300 process, which would be potentially scaled back pretty significantly, and that would really just be around, you know, what are you requesting in FY13, and why do you need it? What are you going to do with it? And really have it be information that's specifically focused just on that and not collect some of the things that have been collected in the past.
Pretty significant changes.
Yes. Pretty significant changes, and changes that will probably receive a fairly positive response, I think, from the agency community.
I know there's some concern that the Exhibit 300s have become a little bit of a bureaucratic process.
Yep.
But by the same token, I think it. I've also heard from folks that it also causes folks to make that business case to justify their programs.
Yes, and that will still, you know, from what we've heard so far, and again, this is still in the proposal stage.
Right.
Nothing is finalized. What we've heard at the conference is that there's potential that, you know, that is still going to be required. You still have to say, what do you want to spend? Why do you need to spend it? And what are you going to do with the money? But some of the other aspects that have looked, you know, been looked upon as sort of a administrative function or something that, you know, is bureaucratic and maybe not needed, might be scaled back. And I think that would make some people pretty happy.
The Capital Planning and Investment Control Conference, and I know people are thinking these are party animals. There's probably a lot of lampshades on heads, right?
A lot of important issues and a lot going on, obviously, in the IT community right now that's being discussed.
Capital planning, I'm not sure people always fully understand what it is. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot, but explain to folks what capital planning is and why it is so important, increasingly important in this tight budget place.
Okay, so one of the things I think it's easier to understand if you think about it as IT investment management. So all of the IT spending across the federal and government and their investments, how that's managed, and capital planning and investment control is another name for that, in terms of basically a structured process for how they select, control, and evaluate the IT investments that each agency has. The big reasons that it's so important. One is that the federal IT spend keeps going up and up and up. I believe that it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about $60 billion. And, you know, in these tight times, what we're hearing, you know, very recently is that with all of the budget issues with the CR, we're going to see spending levels go back to at least FY10 levels and possibly even back to FY08 levels. So the structured analysis that capital planning involves helps you make better decisions about where you allocate those scarce resources.
One of the things that you've been doing over the conference is essentially wargaming on some of the capital planning challenge. Describe to folks how that works, because it almost sounds like something that how does wargaming and capital planning work together?
CIO wargame, and Booz Allen developed this as a modeling and simulation exercise. So probably a better way of thinking about it is as a participatory exercise where we essentially simulate the kind of decisions that folks in the federal IT community have to make around the trade-offs of selecting investment A over investment B, what kind of things are needed to make that investment successful. So we do this as a tabletop exercise in a period of about 2 hours, where participants can have a little bit of fun and be a little bit more interactive in terms of learning the same kind of lessons. So instead of having people talk at you for 2 days, this gives them a chance to really engage, meet some new people, have a little bit of fun, and still learn the lessons of why it's important to, approach the analysis of these investments in a pretty structured way.
This administration been using a lot of techniques like IT dashboards in relation to capital planning, haven't they?
They have. The IT dashboard was introduced last year. Another thing that came out, over the last year is Vivek Kundra's, the federal CIO, the tech stat process, where essentially they built off Baltimore's city stat process for bringing folks into OMB and doing sort of a fairly rigorous analysis of the status of major IT investments. What that's done in the federal IT community is really promote, as this administration has been really pushing, transparency and accountability. Information is out on the public website of the IT dashboard about these projects. Projects are rated in a stoplight fashion, red, yellow, and green. And, it puts pressure on folks to answer questions about why projects are successful or not successful. The other thing that we're seeing is it's really improved a lot of the communication between federal CIOs and the program areas, as well as the vendor community, because no one really wants to be read on the dashboard. So it's, making the vendors that might be prime contractors on these investments work with their government clients more in a more focused way to make sure that their investments can get out of the red, essentially, as well as the interaction between the federal CIOs and the program areas, which has always been one that's been somewhat challenged, I would say, and really has improved the communication. So there's better insight into those investments. There's better understanding about what's going well and what's not going well, hopefully driving towards an improved rate of success for all of these IT projects.
And so the big link between the IT dashboard and even USAspending.gov, this transparency, is essentially giving folks more insight into making sure they have the data to be able to do the planning that they need to do?
I think it's probably a couple of things. One of the major things is a lot of this information wasn't necessarily out in the public realm as easily sort of consumable as it is now. So it's forcing people to ask some questions about, what's going on and what's not going on. Why is a project rated red? Is a vendor not performing? Is there a insufficient program management capability in that agency where they're not able to manage the investment well? So that data being out there is forcing some conversations that probably didn't happen before or didn't happen as well as they could before that, really drives towards what changes do we need to make this investment successful. It may result in cases where an investment gets killed, but it also usually results in some sort of changes where, hey, do we need to replace the program manager, or do we need to have a little bit more structured risk management process for this investment to make sure that it doesn't go off track.
I know one of the other aspects that you're looking at is cloud computing. And again, this is one of these areas where I think not everyone makes the connection between cloud computing and capital planning and investment control. Talk about what folks are talking about.
So what happened, and this is part of what Vivek Kundra released in his 25-point plan that was released out back in December, is that agencies now have to identify three services that they plan on migrating to the cloud. So this is something where, as part of their capital planning and investment control, looking at all of the IT investments across the agency, they need to be thinking about which ones are best candidates for a cloud transition, and which ones they might want to keep in-house, and sort of doing that risk assessment of what's something that's really a viable candidate to be moved to the cloud and what's not. What we're seeing is that agencies now need to really think through this, and it's pushing more agencies companies to more and more take some of what we'd call the commodity services, things like their IT infrastructure, things like websites, things like email, and move them to the cloud. And it's pushing those agencies to reinvest some of the cost savings that they might be able to achieve through a cloud computing solution back into things that can support the mission of the agency. So the big benefit, hopefully, here is that they're performing some of these commodity services in a cheaper way, and able then to take some of the resources that are there, especially, as you mentioned, in the scarce resources of the budget scenario that we're in now, and really have them contribute to the strategic goals of the agency and the mission of the agency rather than in sort of what some people might call overhead functions.
It's interesting because the shift seems to have happened a little bit in this tight budget place that everyone's in. Used to folks talked about the agility that they got out of cloud computing. Now they're really focused on the cost savings.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that the analogy that usually makes the most sense for me is almost like a utility. If you think about, your electricity provider, that you're able to get what you need to get from that utility provider. You can consume more on demand as needed, and it's done on a sort of a basis of your consumption. So the capacity is there to scale it up, but it's done in a more cost-effective manner because you have providers that can do this on a large scale and then therefore offer sort of a volume discount to each individual customer. And then as I mentioned, hopefully the agencies realize some cost savings around that and they can, sort of reallocate those into mission supporting functions.
And something that's being unveiled is something called a cloud cost calculator. What is this?
A cloud cost calculator, we actually, during the session today, it was discussed a little bit, and a lot of there's different versions of it. Meritalk has put out one that the government can use for free, and you can just log on and do it. But it basically is a calculator where you can put in information about your particular situation at an agency, what spending you're doing on, some of your infrastructure services or other IT services, and what you might be able to save if you were to go to a cloud computing solution, whether that be a public cloud or a private cloud or some kind of hybrid.